take the risks and be bold and appreciate that you might not get it right. And it might feel awkward and it might feel horrendous. And also, it just might not work. It just might not work. But I think it's always better to try and be that exposed, vulnerable, challenged part of yourself than just playing it safe all the time with the same several choices or the same several types of roles that you play.
Welcome to the Behind the Scenes podcast. This is Michael Golab. Today I'm talking to Gordon Cowell. Gordon Cowell is currently casting associate for TV casting director Kate Roach-James, where he's worked since 2016. For nearly 5 years prior to this, he was casting associate for theatre casting director Jill Green. Casting credits include A Discovery of Witches, Bodyguard, Soulmates, and Sherlock, to name but a few. We talk about the importance of playing to your strengths, the danger of playing it safe, the value of self-love, the significance of authenticity, the importance of leaving your ego at the door, how learning to see a situation from different perspectives can make you far more effective, tips on self-taping, and so much more. And now I bring you Gordon Cowell. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, Michael.
Thanks so much for joining me.
Absolute pleasure. I'm thrilled to be doing this for you.
What do you love the most about working in casting?
Oh, going in with a big question to start. I think one of the main things for me is that I've managed to find a career that really plays to all my strengths and marries together a lot of the life and work experience that I've been beavering away at for a good 15 years, not really realizing it was leading me to a job in casting. And I think finally when I started the job, having, I don't know, meandered my way through many other walks of life, everything fell into place, and I went, right, this is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. And that was an amazing moment, and it's great to do a job that I'm passionate about at the same time.
And is there anything specific you love about casting? That is it the people, or is it the stories, or
I'd say probably a combination of the two. I'm fascinated by people. I think maybe in a different life I might have been a psychologist. I'm totally riveted by people's relationships and dynamics within families and with friendships and people's behavior, and I love meeting people. And from an artistic sense, I think the realization of a project, from initial words on a page and then ideas in a creative mind to what ends up being realized on screen or stage, it's kind of extraordinary. It's extraordinary how many people are involved in that process and how different things can end up to maybe what people thought it was going to be.
And is there anything you find applicable from being in casting in your daily life? Do you find like you, I don't know, changed how you go through life since you work in casting?
I think one of the hardest things is that the job is very consuming. It's, you know, it's not a 9-to-5 job. The work is never done. I can always be going to the theatre, watching more TV shows, researching actors, reading more scripts, you know, meeting more people, going to more press nights. I think finding a way to feel like you're investing in your job and career and giving it your all, but at the same time making sure you have a life, is, I think, something very important. I don't always find I get the right balance. I think a lot of us maybe feel like that in creative worlds, because there's always stuff to do and always stuff to learn. I don't know. I guess I try lead my personal life as I do my professional life, which is good organization, clear thoughts, but accepting that it's going to be unpredictable and to try and go with the flow a little bit.
What advice would you give to your younger self?
Wow. I'd say to my younger self, worry less about what people think about you. I'd say save more money. live each moment and appreciate the value of self-love and self-care.
Anything particular you do now to worry less and to look after yourself, as in self-care and stuff?
It's something I've always battled with, actually, because I'm a natural worrier, and I think I stress a lot about having not done enough at work, or maybe not giving enough of my time to friends and family. I get a lot of guilt. I think now I try to accept that you can always have done more. There's always going to be stuff on your to-do list. I try to give myself more time. I think that's one of the main things. That's one of the main things I've been focusing on, particularly the last couple of years.
I feel like a lot of people struggle with this self-love, self-care thing.
Mm. Yes, I do too. I think for some people it could be seen as being indulgent.
Oh yeah.
or dare I say a bit wanky, some people might say. God, there's so much value in it. I think it's,
yeah.
And it's so important. And I don't know, maybe if I'm just speaking from what we've gone through this last bizarre year, that having the ability and the time more to self-reflect and ask some bigger questions without the normal crazy pace of life where things can be masked or buried because we don't have the time to think about it. But I think a lot of people are reevaluating a lot of things in their life.
Yeah, fair. It's also like, because like you said, but it's not necessarily an esoteric thing, is it? The self-care thing. It's just very practical, I find. And it can be very grounding to like find out what you really need in order to function. Mm.
I think you're right. And I think it's finding what the exact art of it is for you. What does it mean? And how do you want to go about practicing? I only went to a counsellor once ever because I always thought I'm quite an open book and I speak quite openly to friends and family about problems and I feel like I work through a lot. But I went once to a counsellor and I remember getting to the end of the session when she told me she thought the root of all of my problems came down to like I'd broken my arm when I was seven or something. It was something really bizarre, and saying that I really had to, and she said you're a worrier and you should really focus on doing something like yoga or Pilates or meditation. And I sort of went away from it and I didn't really know where to start and realized that where do you begin with that kind of thing? I think it's a bit of trial and error really, because these things aren't going to be for everybody.
Do you have a letting go ritual? Anything you do to find peace at the end of a stressful day?
It used to be a couple of glasses of wine. But then I realised alcohol doesn't solve all your problems.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
But it's an easy thing, I think, particularly as Brits, we sort of, let's just go to the pub after work, wind down, or I've just got to open that bottle of wine to go with my meal, and which is fine. I'm no judgment here, and believe me, I still enjoy a good glass of wine. But
apparently it's the fastest work. I mean, I read that somewhere. Apparently it's the fastest working tranquilizer, alcohol. It just works instantly. Yeah.
I like that, working tranquilizer. That's a nice term. What do I do? Well, I think I try now to, I mentioned it earlier, I try to accept that my to-do list is never going to be all ticked off. You know, I've put so much pressure on myself for years, not understanding why my to-do list was longer at the end of the day than when it began, and having achieved so much and beating myself up. And I think I have to step away from it. I close down everything, step away, and try and do stuff that makes me happy. And usually that's involving playing music, laughing, I guess cooking and prepping nice meals, and just communicating with friends and family that don't work in my industry to remind me that there is, another life out there, and we're not saving lives, and people are doing a lot other more perhaps serious jobs, because you can get caught up in it. Yeah, I think that's what I do.
Ah, it's a bit of an outside perspective thing. Do you you do yoga as well?
Funnily enough, I've only literally just started doing a particular type of yoga called yoga nidra in the last few weeks. Accidentally stumbled upon my friend doing a sort of a live Instagram feed about it, and I've tried meditating before. I tried yoga before, and I don't know, I'm not very good at sort of sitting still and being told to be calm and breathe and think about what my body's doing. It's very hard. It doesn't come naturally to me, and I think I work at quite a pace, and you know, I'm always on the go. But anyway, she does this kind of exceptional practice that I'd never come across, and it sort of marries positive affirmations with allowing yourself to take the time to totally switch off, check in with yourself and your body and your mind and where you're at. And also she does incredible visualizations to take you out of yourself, and it sort of paints the most incredible vivid pictures and of being somewhere completely else. And it's been extraordinary. It's been really extraordinary, and it's been a bit of a game changer for me the last couple of weeks. So, yeah.
And these are Zoom classes, right?
Yeah, she does a Zoom class once a week, which I do. Fortunately, we have the videos off. That was my biggest worry. That we're all just lying down in our own rooms and everyone can see each other. But no, the videos are off. We're all muted and we just listen to the sound of her voice. And then she also...
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's incredible. And she's recorded other meditations that you can use either in the morning or through the day. At the moment, I'm doing one in the morning and one in the evening.
Mm. What's her name if people want to find her and join?
Oh, her name's Siobhan Dillon, and she's got a website which is called Salus, SALUS. It's Salus Meditation, and she's even got some free meditations on her website, and she talks about how she learned the practice and why she does it and the benefits. I can't rave about it enough. I've been telling all my family and friends, so I'm thrilled you asked.
Wow. Great. Now, these are actually three questions. So what would be your main advice to someone who'd like to succeed in casting as a filmmaker or actor?
Okay, my main advice would be don't do it for the money or for the accolades. I think some people want to go into it to be rich and famous, and
yeah,
that is not it. Let's be honest, that's a very slim percentage of people. I think people should be authentic. I think people should trust their instincts. I also think people should be receptive to critical feedback and to be adaptable. I think with any creative job, it's like heart and soul, and you know you're sort of bearing yourself. It's very vulnerable and exposing. And I think for that reason, people can be very, very protective about what they're delivering or what they're producing, and then it can be quite difficult to, I guess, respond to critique and to adjust to maybe what somebody is seeing from what you're giving, which maybe isn't exactly what you think you're giving. If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a big question. I mean,
they're all big questions, Michael. You're making me think today.
How do you become authentic, basically? How do you find your authentic self, like, in what you do? Is it trial and error, or is it... Because I feel like, especially in this business, it's like very easy to lose yourself, right? Is to, like, I don't know, run after something that you're not and try to please people or whatever.
I think that's a very good point. And also because it's so subjective, everybody's opinion can... just differ so wildly that you can, I think you're right, lose a sense of self. I think a lot of it comes down to understanding who you are as a person. I think it's very easy. All of us can get lost in what we're doing day to day, or what we're doing to try and please other people, family, friends, society as a whole. And I think just don't try and be anything that you're not. I think be comfortable in yourself. Except that we've all got strengths and weaknesses. Just don't try and present or force something that doesn't come naturally. I think it really comes across.
What would you say are the greatest mistakes that people make in this business?
From my point of view, I'd say expecting the next casting process to be smoother and more easy than the last one. they're always challenging. There's always bumps in the road, and I've learned to accept that, and I sort of work with that now. I think people may be taking jobs that they're not 100% sure about.
As actors, you mean?
I think for all of us, I think for casting directors, for actors, I think it's so important just to be 100% sure that it's, you know, it speaks to you, that you want to do it and that you can offer something to it. Because invariably, I think if there's any doubts at all, you're not going to be 100% in it, and I think you'll be unhappy. And also, I think then there's dangerous elements that come into play, like there could be self-sabotage going on. I think it can affect your behaviour. I also think making sure you live a life for all of us is so important. You know, this isn't the be-all and end-all. You can't function 24/7 as a casting director or as an actor. Like, you've got to have other stuff. You've got to make sure you've got hobbies and interests and the support of friends and family, and you know, and yeah, I think it's so crucial. It's so crucial because I've seen it even in the casting world. I think because it's so consuming and competitive, some people literally will give their all day in, day out, and you know, come to retirement age, having maybe not met a partner, not had children, maybe been very successful and bought houses and, you know, had some nice holidays and cast some amazing things. But frequently they die within a couple of years of retirement because they've given everything. They're exhausted and that's it. Their life's spent. And it's terribly sad. And it's happened to quite a few people. Yeah, it's so important. I just live a life. Live a life. It's we've all got to live a life.
Ah, so it's about saying no to things.
Yes, I think so. I think it's the hardest thing, isn't it? Because you think, well, if I say no to this, that could be the last chance that I would have worked in the next month, or, you know, maybe working with that particular director would have given me this opportunity to do something next because they were going to go on to do something, I don't know, bigger and better. Or I think you've got, we all have to say no sometimes.
Yeah, it's such a big thing though, because it comes so easy to say yes to things, right?
It's it does.
Like instinctual to just say yeah, of course, yeah, sure, but to say no to things that don't really connect with you, be it in life or your job.
Agreed, and also when it's not practical or realistic to do it, like have you got enough energy and time and headspace to actually invest in whatever you're saying yes to? Because I've battled with this most of my life. I'm a yes person. I want to please people and. Because I always feel there's more to be done and more to learn, and I invariably will burn out. I'll power through for like 6 to 8 months of, you know, just crazy schedule of having said yes to whatever it is personally and professionally, and then I've got nothing left, and I'm wiped out and ill, or you know, not functioning on all cylinders because I'm spent.
Interesting. Do you have a favourite failure? Or how has a failure or apparent failure set you up for later success?
I'm going to be honest with you. I hate the word failure.
Yeah.
Because I think it's really healthy to have things to work towards and goals. But I don't like the concept of you either totally win something or you fail it completely. And I'd say, if I was going to say maybe things that haven't worked out in the way that I'd hoped. there's tons of them, Michael. There's tons of them. I'd say, well, not getting my predicted GCSEs or A-levels at school and at college because I had a degree of complacency, having been told I was going to get something and then didn't really quite do the work to do it and didn't get it. And that was a big shock and a lesson to go, okay, you got to do the work still. I think not getting my first choice of year abroad university when I was studying, which took me on a completely different path. I think not getting an agent when I graduated from drama school, not getting the job with Kate when I interviewed, which is a true story. I didn't get the job.
So Kate is Kate Rhodes-James.
Sorry, Kate Rhodes-James. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I probably should have said who I work for. And I have worked for 4 years, but it's incredible. Every single one of those, I guess, misfires or not quite achieving the goals that were set were blows, and I found difficult, but in some way took me in a slightly different route or adjusted my mindset about each of the routes, and I ended up doing something fabulous as a result. Yeah, I don't know if I have a favorite out of all of that. Maybe my favorite would be not getting the job with with Kate Roach-Jones. I'd been working in theatre casting for near on 5 years, and I really didn't know what I was going to do next. I was a bit burnt out, and I'd learnt a lot and done some incredible. I worked on some incredible shows, but I didn't know what was next. I felt I'd learnt about as much as I could in that process, and I didn't know where to go next. And I decided to sort of interview for, if I could, with the TV casting director, which is as hard a crossover in my world as it is for actors sometimes who've maybe just gone down a theatre route to start with, or it's, you know, but I think there's a lot of pigeonholing in all our walks of life. And I mean, at the time, as you will know too.
Yeah.
I know we've talked about that before. But Kate wanted a casting associate, of which I was one, but I was very much from a theatre world. And I think rightly so. She said, you've got a lot of the attributes as an associate, but not in my field. She was completely right. So she hired somebody else. And I was devastated because I'd written down 3 casting directors that I wanted to work for in the TV world, and she was number one.
Wow.
And when I met her, I just enamored by her, and I was such a fan of all of her work. And I was really gutted. I was really gutted I didn't get the job. And I sat on it for 24 hours, and I've never done this before, but I sent her an email and I said, Kate, I would dearly love to work for you in whatever capacity, and I'm not grand. This isn't about me maintaining a casting associate status. If you wanted to take me on as an office junior or an intern, just so I could come and learn from you and work with you, I'd just be very honored to do that. And she contacted me the next day and she said, yeah, okay, there's been a rethink. I want you to come and do a trial with me for 3 months.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's amazing.
I love that story. And it's a testament to just really wanting something, and also not really wanting something and really working for it, but also leaving your ego at the door.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I could have... I'd been a casting associate and I co-cast theatre productions for a number of years, but it wasn't ultimately about that. It wasn't about what my job title was going to be. It was about starting a whole new chapter in a world that I hadn't worked in before. And I think that was an amazing lesson for me. And I'm, well, obviously very, very grateful, because I'm 4.5 years down the line and I am now Kate's associate. So it worked out.
Wow. So you approached it with humility and that, wow. Hmm.
I keep using the word authentic because I think it's important, but I just try to be authentic. And I know we've met, you know, in a personal situation with casting workshops, and we've talked about how people come across and how you want to interact with people. And I know I've said this to you before, but I like to think that I am in the workplace that I am with my family and friends.
Why do you prefer working in TV casting rather than theatre casting?
I'd probably say I wouldn't say I prefer it, actually. It's quite, there's such completely different processes. I think the thing that maybe overrides the theatre casting process for me and does tick a massive box for me is that it's such a varied world, and it changes daily, TV casting. I think in the world that I was working theatre-wise, we did a lot of musicals, which are often revivals, and so the things are coming to you fully formed. So, you know, you know what you're casting. This lead part needs to sing these notes and needs to look like this. And, you know, extra skills include tap dancing and or guitar playing. So, you know, it's quite, it can be quite formulaic. Mm. And don't get me wrong, of course, there's new theatre ventures all the time. And we worked on some exceptional things from workshops development right through to end theatre production product. But I think with TV world, you know, we're getting a couple of draft scripts, and every couple of days we get the new draft script, and suddenly this part is now 45 instead of 25, and it's a male instead of a female, or, you know, whatever the change is. It keeps you on your toes. It's yeah, very changeable. You have to adapt.
Mm. Yeah. So you like the adapting part?
I do. I like that. I like being challenged. I don't like when things become safe and mundane and predictable. And that's personally as well as professionally.
So interesting. Because especially I find in this, well, God, in life in general, we're like all looking for some sense of security, right? As human beings, be it in our jobs or whatever. And I find also in like, especially in acting, obviously the more safe a performance is, the more boring it is.
Huh. Yeah, that's very true. I agree with you. And I think you're right about what we're all going through at the moment is... Well, please give us stability, please give us security. We're sort of craving it.
I mean, generally, it is very difficult for people to, like, you know, stay outside of their comfort zones. Do you have any advice for that? Like, how to stay outside of your comfort zone?
I would say take the risks and be bold and appreciate that you might not get it right. And it might feel awkward and it might feel horrendous. And also, it just might not work. It just might not work. But I think it's always better to try and be that exposed, vulnerable, challenged part of yourself than just playing it safe all the time with the same several choices or the same several types of roles that you play, you know. And don't get me wrong, that can work so well for some people and they can make great careers out of it and earn, you know, good money and it's regular and there's nothing wrong with that at all. But I think if you're the type of person who doesn't like to be predictable or wants to be challenged, then you kind of have to take those leaps. And I think they really are leaps. And they're terrifying. No one likes to be vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah. But you feel, in a way, I mean, speaking about performances now, you feel more alive, far more alive, even if you fail.
I think that's true.
Yeah, and I feel like God, we can't go to theatre now, can we? But also the audience will feel that. They will feel more alive because of that leap of faith.
Mm. Yes, and you're living in the moment and just throwing something out there and yeah. Seeing what comes back. And it won't land all the time, and that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Why is it important to keep creating good theatre, films? Why is storytelling important?
Well, I think it's essential escapism for educational reasons. There's always stories to be learnt from. And different people to learn from. I think a form of expression, and some people just have to get this stuff out. It's in their blood, it's in their nature, and they need to do it. I think a lot of people can just churn out something that's lazy and copycat and not challenging or inspiring. And I think it's super important that I like your choice of keep creating the sort of good theatre, the good films, because we can just have a load of just okay theatre and okay films, sure. That's very easy. But keep making it good and challenging and exciting. I think it's essential. We must keep doing it. And God, I just, thinking back to sort of last year when everything was grinding to a halt, and where's the content going to come from if people don't start getting out there and shooting some TV soon?
Yeah, it's funny now, especially now, like watching films and TV from, I don't know, from more than a year ago, and you see people hugging, not wearing masks, you're like, oh, wow. That seems like a decade ago, doesn't it?
I know. Yeah. It really does.
Yeah. Huge crowds.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's not real.
It doesn't happen now.
In the last 5 years, what new belief or behavior or habit has most improved your life?
Oh, gosh. Wow. Well, okay. I don't know if it's because... I'm sorry, I keep talking about the last year, but of course it's been such a monumental one. And I think it's afforded me more time to reflect. I've... really accepted it's okay to say no. And not to feel guilty about that. No, I'm not going to take this call. No, I'm not going to respond to that text message or this email now, this second. And no, I don't want to do that social event. You know, I really have just accepted. I can say no and it's okay. I think also accepting that I can't control everything. Because I know I am a bit of a control freak and I like order and to make sense and logic of things. And I think when that starts unraveling, it's, well, you as a person can unravel. I mean, fortunately, I haven't completely unraveled, but, you know, I think we've all had a few wobbles for sure. I think meditating has been a game changer for me, as I talked about earlier. I think that's really improved my life in a number of ways. And also, it's okay not to be okay, and it's important to talk about that too.
That's so important, yeah.
I think particularly for actors as well, where the need can be to project, yes, I'm doing great. Yeah, the auditions are going really well. And, you know, look what this project I just worked on and everything's fine. You know, social media is horrendous for that. I think particularly for actors, because you're trying to not just have a presence, but also market yourself. But I think even for us as people, I think it's such a dangerous world to get consumed by and think, oh, I've got to post a good picture, and I've got to say something valid, and I've got, you know, and actually, do you know what? Sometimes you don't, you don't have to, and sometimes you're just having a shitty day, or sometimes you just need to say, I really need to speak to somebody.
Yeah, and it's really important, like you said, to allow yourself to feel unwell without indulging in it, but to allow yourself to, because I find the secondary thing that we often do is to think or feel, I shouldn't be feeling this way. And then you get like double, you get super angry at yourself and frustrated that you should be feeling better, because surely it's, you know. So to allow that, because once you allow it, it kind of tends to pass much, much faster, I find.
I completely agree. I really do.
What unpopular beliefs do you hold? Where would you say you diverge from the crowd in your work, in your life, etc.?
Oh, wow. I think, well, this might not be hugely popular to say, but I don't believe that all actors should expect feedback from every audition that they do.
Yeah.
I don't think it's realistic.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to say, and I know of course everyone would love feedback on what they're doing day to day, but you know, it's just not practical. It's not realistic. I think if people maybe get a recall for a project and, you know, they've invested that extra bit more, I think that's relevant. But if I was to give feedback on every self tape I ever asked somebody to submit, or, you know, every casting that was ever held, I just wouldn't get any work done. And also often that feedback doesn't come. You know, I'm not getting a full list of people that we've put forward for a show with then an itemized breakdown of notes for every single person. It doesn't work like that. You know, creatives are as busy as everyone else. So, you know, we'll get a list of, we like these three people, we'd like to recall them. That's, you know, that's the kind of feedback I get. So, you know, it's very hard then to put that back to an agent or to an actor and say, look, this is, you know, you just weren't on the list. I'm sorry, that's it. And that's about as detailed as it gets most of the time.
It's nothing personal.
Absolutely. It's just the way it is. And I know that's very non-committal and non-specific. But yeah, it is just what it is. I think there's something else, actually, unpopular belief. I think there's so much talk from people about diversity and equality in our business, and so many people failing to do anything about it and just want to say how important it is and not doing enough. It's so very easy to go, yes, I think it's such an important thing to be doing, and then not doing anything. And that really winds me up. From a casting perspective, of course, it's the forefront of our mind. And we do, I think, as much as we can to make this prevalent and talked about every day of our working life. I think there's a lot of other people just posting about it on Twitter and going, yes, I'm absolutely behind the move. And I just think, is that what you're doing? You're posting about it? Well, what are you actually doing? What's your action here? Apart from just trying to be visually talking about it. I think as well, allowing and accepting that my work does not define me, because the job can be very all-consuming. You know, there's never enough hours in the day. There's always stuff to be doing. And I do want to down tools at a certain time, and I do want to go and speak to my family and friends, or I do want to, you know, I do want to cook a meal, or I could always be doing more. And I think I've shocked a few people saying that, because people who are hungry for success and want to keep making a name for themselves and keep seeming like they're always learning and building knowledge and, you know, they give it their all and everything. And I just think I need to have a life. I need, I'm not defined by my work.
Mm.
It's a very important part of me and I'm very passionate about it, but it doesn't entirely define me as a person. And I'm determined to keep following my own path by learning and trusting myself and following my instincts.
Yeah. What are the main things you learned from Kate Rhodes-James, actually?
I could write a book about what I've learned from Kate Rhodes-James. She's phenomenal with actors in the room. The ability to put them at ease, but at the same time, in letting them come in with their instinctive interpretation of something and then finding a way, I guess, as we do, manipulate the situation to get what we want from it. And you're choosing what those notes might be for an actor, or finding the way to just bring that little extra tone here, or, you know, could we just tweak that there? But it's how you pitch that. And she's incredibly eloquent, and actors adore her. And she reads brilliantly with everybody. So that's one thing. I think also her ability to follow her instincts and be receptive to talk in a creative environment, but not to compromise as well. You know, if she really believes somebody should be seen for something or should be given that recall when they weren't, you know, she will really fight their corner, and she always pitches it so well. I'm sort of, because it's very difficult when you're managing effectively, a really wide range of people's opinions and sometimes egos, and, you know, we're sort of got this, we're trying to present options for everybody and the hope that everyone will get consensus, and to navigate that is very difficult. I think she's remarkable with people. She's got, yeah, I could have a whole podcast episode just talking about her, to be honest.
Fascinating. Also, just crossed my mind that both you and Kate, you both started out being actors, right?
Yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe you also kind of, well, you know how it is to think or feel like an actor, so maybe you have like more of a connection there.
I completely agree. We know from the minute that we go and greet the actor outside the audition room exactly everything you're feeling in that moment. We get it. We've been there, and I think that helps us to empathise and to create the best environment for actors to flourish and to give their best.
I noticed in my, working as an actor, I've talked about this before, is that the directors that used to be actors or are still actors, they talk to actors very differently. I find that very fascinating.
I think we can, I think we can all learn from all different sides of the coin, as it were.
Oh, yeah.
I worked for an agent for 3 years. So, in my job as well in casting now, I know exactly what they're going through on the other side, you know. So that helps me too.
Yeah, being adaptable again, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, big thing. What are your plans for the future? What are the main things on your bucket list?
To have people round for dinner.
Fair.
My plans for the future are to continue to allow myself the time and space to nurture myself for self-love. I think it's so crucial, particularly in these times. I want to travel again.
Oh yeah.
I'd love to go to New Zealand. That's on my bucket list. I want to be happy and healthy and to have children at some point. And from a professional standpoint, I want to keep learning. I want to keep working on projects that inspire and excite me. Yeah, learn. I just want to keep learning. I want to keep learning and growing as a person.
A little thing that I just thought about is because, especially now with COVID, but this whole, self-tapes, like for people who are listening and they're not in the acting business, self-tapes are basically where you tape yourself instead of meeting the casting director in the room. You just tape yourself in your flat or your house with a phone usually and a reader or someone on Zoom. And a question, because now it's becoming even more popular, of course, because we can't meet people in person, is do you think that it makes a huge difference of what kind of equipment you use? Or would you say that casting director will see through all of that and they'll just, you know, see that the acting's good or that you're suitable?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think first and foremost, I'd say to anybody to not rush out and spend an excessive amount of money on equipment, because you can perfectly well get away with using your phone or Zoom, as I do for castings. You know, I record on Zoom reading with people. I think, yeah, I do. And it works. It works fine. It's not ideal, but, you know, none of this is ideal.
Yeah,
I think as a basic standpoint, I think the most essential stuff for me is, are you in a well-lit room? Because people do film themselves in like these dark corners of wherever they're filming. And I just think, well, I can't even see your face. It's,
yeah,
you know, well, where are you? I think nothing too crazy going on in the background. Not, you know, don't be in a really cluttered, overstyled room in your house or flat. Ideally, just a plain background, good lighting. Make sure I can hear you. And that'll do. Like, honestly, it can be that simple. And it can be literally your phone is on a tripod and you're just filming on your phone. It can work perfectly well. Just make sure you're not too far away. Make sure you're audible. I know a lot of people have started going out and, you know, buying backdrops and lighting and microphones. You know, it just it all adds up and can be really expensive. And I think unless you've got a lot of spare money and maybe unless you're, I don't know, if you're doing excessive amounts of self-taping a day, then maybe you feel it's warranted. But
But you wouldn't say that certain phones are better than other phones for self-taping? Like, I don't know, an iPhone, whatever, 10 or 11 is better than a Samsung or any stuff like that? You wouldn't say that?
It really doesn't cross my mind. The only thing I notice is when I get sort of something blurry or something where the visual isn't clear or I can't hear what the actor's doing. And the other thing that some people are doing is, yeah, I think the one of the main things that has been cropping up recently is actors who maybe don't live with anybody or they live with somebody who isn't around to tape with them at that given moment. So they decide just to record their lines of dialogue and then leave a gap where the other person would be speaking and then doing facial expressions of response to whatever that person is saying. But it's not really helpful if we need to be able to see you acting and reacting to what's being said. So the very least people need to record themselves doing those alternate lines so they've got something to bounce off.
Yeah, well, what really works well, I find, is, and I wouldn't have thought that before lockdown one actually, is to have another actor on another device reading in with you live.
Yes,
it's amazing. I always thought you need another person in the room, but having it on, I found that really helps massively.
It absolutely, and that's a great other option for people that don't live with somebody.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. And about like video quality, you wouldn't say like do HD or however frames per minute, or there's no preference you have?
No, I think that's the other thing as well, Michael, is that people sort of get fixated on the fact that they're submitting something that would be in the final end result series. And it's, you know, I don't need to see a finished, polished performance that you would deliver on set. I don't see a complete setup of how this would be in an ideal scenario in the scene. You know, this is me getting a flavour of what you have read from the scene, how you're delivering the dialogue, and if you've done enough for us then to go, yes, great, let's recall this person. That's what it's about.
It's like a rehearsal, basically, yeah.
Yes, totally.
It's just you do get these thoughts where you think that, even not consciously, that when the quality is a tiny bit better, I mean, obviously, like, you can't send, like, maybe a 4K video to someone.
No,
that'd be too much. But
please don't.
if you film in 4K, probably have to compress it, right? Because so it doesn't take you 2 hours to download it. But that if the quality is a tiny bit better, that it subliminally kind of affects people. Even if I don't know if you'd agree with that.
In all honesty, like I see some exceptionally professional tapes come in. You know, where the lighting's incredible. They're clearly in they're in some kind of studio in their house that they've created, and the quality is like literally unbelievable. I could be watching this on a cinema screen, and the quality's amazing. But ultimately, all I care about is can you act? Can you act?
Yeah.
Do
so
I believe
true.
You? Do yeah, I believe yeah. you? Are you listening to the other person? Are you compelling in this scene and on screen? Those are the questions. I get what you're saying. You know, obviously, I'd always love to look at good quality stuff, and sometimes I get some god-awful sometimes because somebody's on it holding their phone when it's shaking. they're going out of shot every other word. You know,
believe me,
it happens.
Yeah. So basically, the packaging, it's nice if the packaging's kind of nice, but the contents have to be good. That's the most important thing. Hmm.
It is, and that's how I go food shopping as well.
Very good. Where can people find you? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
My email address is readily available online on the Casting Directors Guild website. I think the hardest thing, I say this to everybody when I do workshops or whenever I meet actors who say, can I write to you? And I say, please do. You're more than welcome to. But please as well do understand that I'm overseeing three email addresses at work. Myself, a group one for the office, a general office inquiries email address, and also sometimes Kate's emails if she's busy and has been busy in castings, and I sort of look at that. So, and always my focus has to be the attention of our projects and what's immediate, what I'm dealing with. I always try to get back to people. I love to say that I do get back to everybody, but I've currently got a folder which is marked but actors I have met who are waiting for a response from me. And I filed them knowing that I've got to go through them at some point and just say a cursory thank you. But it's very, very difficult. It's very difficult. But I'm always happy to hear from people. I think when it's relevant as well. I sometimes do get a very generic copy and paste job that I can tell has probably done the rounds of 50 casting offices. And it's not very engaging. And I think if somebody's got something relevant to say to me about a new showreel that has been edited, or they're going to be featuring on a TV show, or they know that we're working on a particular show and the reasons why they thought they might get in touch about a role. I'd always say those kind of emails should be, I think, run via the agent, really. But I'm always happy to hear people's news, and it's always good for me to have a reminder of people that I've met before or maybe have popped out of my mind. And, you know, I'm always happy for people to be in touch.
Cool. Yeah, any parting words, last thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners?
I often get asked, well, like, what are the most important things that, you know, I would say to actors? Or I would say to everybody, be honest, be bold, be realistic. Leave your ego at the door. That's so important for all of us. It's not always fair. You're not always going to get the right answers, I'm afraid. I think you have to prepare, engage in a process, really invest in it wholeheartedly, and then you have to just let it go. and also don't be an asshole. I think that's really important in life, generally.
Oh yeah.
But don't be an asshole, because do you know what? People talk. They really do. If you've gone on set or you've been in an audition and you're just an asshole, it gets around, I tell you, it really does. And no one wants an asshole in their company. Have I said asshole enough?
You can say it one more time if you want.
I think, don't be an asshole.
That's so true. It's so true. Especially like, it's this whole long-term thinking as well, right? If you like short-term, you think you might, I don't know, gain something from being an asshole, like you said. But long-term, it'll come back to you.
I agree.
And even if you're in a position of power and you think you can get away with it for like, you know, a few years, it will come back to you eventually.
It really will.
Yeah.
It really will. Karma's a bitch.
Yeah. Great. Thanks so much, Gordon. That was amazing.
I'm honestly delighted. I'm so thrilled you asked me. I'm very touched that you asked me, and I hope I've provided something vaguely useful for the listeners.
Thank you for listening. If you find this podcast valuable, there are many ways you can support it. You can leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you happen to listen to it, and you can share it on social media. It really does help other listeners find us. And make sure to subscribe to get the next episode. Thanks so much for your support.